welcome everyone to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. We gather here on a cyclical basis to study these ideas together because we feel as though studying these ideas together, we kind of bounce questions off of each other, clarifications, things like that. But one part of the philosophy is independent study, because we only progress as we work independently. And this way we become stronger. We don't have to depend on anybody else's help, although it is there if we need it. And the policy of the Lodge, as we said, is independent devotion to the cause. And the main idea of our declaration is that of universal brotherhood and how these ideas can spread broadcast the philosophy to different sections of the world. And as we can see on the back of our little handout, that these ideas are all over the world. And we think there's 20-some here, and we add them periodically. We add different lodges. And the basis for union among all theosophists is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, meaning that we just use the information that has been put down in print. We are very lucky to have it in print because they are ancient ideas, and they used to just be passed on verbally, but now we have them so that we can study independently. So anybody can be a theosophist, anyone who is engaged in the true service of humanity, and people, there may be many people, there probably are many people out there that have this as their life's meditation, and who can, and are theosophists and may not even know what theosophy is, but they are acting in the true fashion. And we welcome all those who are in accord with its declared purposes. And the true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. And this lodge in Philadelphia carries out the ideals of theosophy by having two meetings a week. And of course we're here on Sunday, and the doors open at 10:30. The meeting starts promptly at 11 and runs until 12 on Wednesday, and on Sundays we're a little more formal and we do have talks and discussions. Last month, November, it was general theosophical principles, and last week we started in December cycles and cyclic law. So today our class is on dreams and visions of the night, and next week will be after death and before life. On Wednesdays we are studying the ocean of theosophy. I believe we're finishing up the section on the human constitution. Thank you. And that class runs from 7:45 until 9, and the library is open from 5:30 until 7:30, and the book table in the foyer has straight-line theosophical information on there to help you with your independent studies. The library, when it is open, there's always a student available for any questions about your, if you do have independent studies, the class reading and the reference for Wednesday night is always available so you can prepare ahead of time. And we are financially sustained entirely by voluntary contributions, and similarly the activities are also voluntary. Everybody you see up here on the platform has volunteered to do service. And there's other ways to do service. If anybody's handy, we always can use a little bit of help with this old building. So we think that's it. So as we said, today's class is on dreams and visions of the night. And with this overall topic being cycles and cyclic law, we're sure that because we questioned it as well about what does dreams have to do with cycles. And it was just an interesting study to find out because we never really thought about how dreams and cycles come together. And the whole idea of dreams and visions, some people would think, well, why do we have to even think about them? We have dreams. Sometimes they mean something, sometimes they don't. But dreams in the philosophy are very important. And because we're looking at another plane of our existence. And in this panel, and specifically in this talk, we will look to see how dreams and visions differ from each other and the importance that each of them have in our lives. And it's a very involved topic as well. And the talks for the panels are very short, and we certainly can't cover everything. So we're hoping that some of these ideas that we're going to be put forth will generate questions. And also, we have so many books in the library. If anybody's interested in that independent study, it's a very interesting study to follow up with. So basically, to start off then, what is a dream? And when we look at dreams, and what they are, we have to look at the idea of the three states of consciousness that we all experience. And the first one is, of course, the waking state, which we're all familiar with, we hope. And the Sanskrit is known as jagrata. And the second state is the sleeping or dreaming state, swapna, and the dreamless or deep sleep, sushupti. And we all go through these three stages of consciousness when we go to bed at night. We're awake. And then as we fall asleep, we go into the dreaming state and then the dreamless sleep. And then waking up, we come back in reverse. So we go from the dreamless sleep to the dreaming state and back to the waking state. And it's interesting because a lot of people may not remember the dreams that they had in the dreamless, when we're going forward into sleep, but if we wake up right as the part that we're dreaming, we usually remember those dreams. So, and this is part of the cycle idea because these states cycle every night. And it's the same cycle that we go through every night. Even if we don't remember our dreams, this is the pattern. This is the cycle that everybody goes through. And we can also fit it in on that whole idea of when we're talking about the waking and sleeping cycle, it's that cycle as well. And the day and night cycles, we can look at that too. And the principles of man that are active during ordinary dreams are kama, which is the passions and desires. And when we look at the whole idea of mind is broken up into, not broken up, can function on two different planes, a higher plane going towards the more spiritual and the lower. So it's the lower mind or manas that is involved with kama in normal dreams. And we have one interesting part we found was HPB likened the sleep states, compared them to the after-death states. And we thought that was interesting. Kama loka, or it's the first state after death where the lower part is sloughed off, can be likened to the dreaming state because that's, in regular dreams, that's pretty much the lower part. that we're functioning on. And the higher state, Devakan, which is likened to what people think of as heaven or that more spiritual state where our higher aspirations are worked out, can be likened also to that dreamless state. Because at that point, and the next talk will cover that more, in this Shushupti state, the dreamless or deep sleep, that's when our higher self is free from the body, because at this point the body is asleep. It's almost in a paralyzed state, and the brain is asleep as well. So when we fall asleep and we're in the second stage of swapna, or the dream state, it is instinct and not reason that is in control. And during sleep, the passions and desires in lower manas send almost like electric shocks to the brain. And depending upon how firmly they are impressed in the brain will determine if we remember the dream or just bits and pieces of it. And it's interesting because I'm sure we've all awakened and we think, you know I dreamt, but I don't remember what it was. And then at some point during the day, you hear a song, you smell something, somebody says something to you, and then boom, that little bit that came through is said, yeah, that's what I dreamt about. So it's interesting how these little impressions can be brought forward. And so we sometimes have recurring dreams, and again, when we're looking at cycles in nature, these recurring dreams can be thought of as cyclic return of impressions, because they keep coming back. But these are from more the emotional side of our nature, because the brain is connected physically and metaphysically to the inner man during the day and night. And their thoughts of the higher is always trying to get through. And sometimes they will come through as the voice of consciousness or will come through as dreams. So another thing we need to look at then is, what should we do when we do remember our dreams? There are many books that we know are out on the shelves in bookstores about interpreting your dreams. Theosophy would say to keep your dreams close to your heart and minds and try and figure out the symbology of these dreams yourself. Because all the books in the stores are basically different when it comes to interpreting your dreams and what does this symbol mean, what does that symbol mean. And even to the point of talking to somebody about your dreams will sometimes take the impression that that dream has made. If you're discussing it, you may lose some of that impression, and you're giving somebody the opportunity to make suggestions to you about what to do about the dream. And we would just suggest that these dreams be interpreted on your own. So what's the importance of dreams? Well, they do, especially if they're coming from the emotional side of one's nature, then they need to be looked at as to what's going on in your life, especially if they're repetitive dreams. And we can certainly learn from them, because they sometimes the higher is trying to get through. And we do want to, there are seven different types of dreams. And we would suggest, if people don't have the Transactions of the Blavatsky Lodge, there's a section in here that is almost like the Bible of dreams. And because HPB does this wonderful section on dreams, what they are, what causes them, the types of dreams, all these questions that people have asked her. So we just want to let people know about that. So dreams would be divided up into seven types. Prophetic dreams, and these are impressed on our memory by the higher self and are generally plain and clear. Allegorical dreams, or hazy glimpses of realities caught by the brain and distorted by our fancy. These are generally only half true. And then there are dreams sent by adepts, good or bad, by mesmerizers, or by the thoughts of very powerful minds bent on making us do their will. Four, retrospective dreams, and they are of events in the past and could be of past incarnations as well. And warning dreams for others who are unable to be impressed themselves. And these would be people that maybe those dreams aren't getting through, so somebody else is receiving the dream to help prompt them that there's something they need to look at. Confused dreams, the causes of which have been discussed, and those are the ones like from the lower aspect of our being. And then dreams which are mere fancies and chaotic pictures owing to digestion, some mental trouble, or such like external cause. So we will go on to the second kind.
From the Bible, from Job, in dreams and visions of the night, man is instructed. From this part on, we'll sort of put together the dreams and the visions. Since the English language is not so direct, we think that the idea of saying visions give a little depth to the idea of the dream. Because as was stated, there are higher dreams, universal type dreams, and then there are the regular ones that fall into that category. And we are told that man is capable of a deep sleeping state, when he's in that deep sleeping state, to reach what are called the Akashic Heights or the Akashic Records. As was stated earlier, we will go through that same process of how we fall to sleep, how we dream, how we go into deep sleep, and how we come back. And the idea that we must keep in mind is, on that return, as it was said, we have to go through the same steps going back as going forward. So what might have started off as a pure instruction, by the time it goes through all these different states, it is lost. But yet, it does give us proof to know that there is some part of us beside this physical that we know about, this proof of a hidden self within. Because if the brain and the body are asleep, who's seeing? Who's hearing? Who's sensing what's been seen? Who's understanding it? There is that other part of our nature that we, due to our waking state, have many times, life after life, covered up so that we think we are what we see in the mirror and this physical form and everything around us. And yet that, they're telling us, is the illusion. Now, in these Akashic Heights that can be reached, one can bring back into the waking state that divine knowledge that has been gathered into his waking consciousness if, and this is the big if he lives a cleansed life of all impurities. Now we can all sit here and say, that's not me. But there is a part of us that who knows in lives before how often we have been in touch with that true nature inside and touched that higher height. And as was stated, using the idea, it was a vision, and yet it was a dream. Now, we know, just in general, that each one's constitution varies from another. And that is due to past karma, and until we can make the brain in any one lifetime porous to those whisperings, shall we say, of our soul, of what we really are. So, that, it tells us what's within us, and that we can see plainly that part of us that can see the future, the past, the presence. Those are all from the Akashic state. And we must search within, not outside of ourselves. And it may seem that it might take a lifetime or lifetimes. But the idea is we must pursue it at one time to start it rolling. And who knows, again, in lifetimes, how far we've already gone in that. It tells us that the more spiritual in nature one is, the more active one's fancies and greater are the probabilities of one's receiving in vision the correct impressions, conveying to one's all-seeing and one's ever-wakeful ego. So when we hear these ideas of a spiritual level, and we see them in many philosophies and many ancient religions of the time, that spirit and divine power, it's living dormant in every human being. And it states that the wider the sweep of one's spiritual vision, the higher will the God within be won. For us to understand that statement. And it is inquired by each one by themselves through training and the use of intuition. Save cases that we might say of, in one lifetime, the natural born sensitive, which historically there has been those who we can bring up later. The other thing to understand is the language in this deep sleep state is different from what we see on this level. Primarily, it's all done in symbols. And we can tell that there are certain basic symbols throughout the world that mean the same thing. They don't change. But there are certain basic symbols that can bring us to that existence of knowing. This life and knowledge are really inseparable, okay? So, it tells us by knowing the nature of that inner man, that when we apply it to the dream or vision, it's natural discloses itself, and there is no question as to whether this is from the astral plane, or is it one of the highest natures from that plane for us to understand our own dreams? And as was stated, only we can understand our dreams. Many books that are out on dreams are very general. And it has to be within us to what we understand. And it is through this faculty of our spiritual intuition that the direct and certain knowledge can be obtained. But we have to work on getting to that point. The philosophy also speaks of a life's meditation. What has been the main cause, their whole life, the searching, the needing for? It tells us that which is your heart is set on. We need to look at this idea of a life's meditation and start to question. Where are our thoughts? Are they thoughts of a noble? Are they high thoughts? Are they altruistic? Are they for everyone? Or are they selfish thoughts that we carry within the day, and possibly we can carry them within the dream state. So if each and every one comes to that point where they really want to know, what is my life's meditation? And they start searching. This will give us, shall we say, instruments of knowledge that we can indulge ourselves in. And if we remember that that Akasha realm holds the divine intelligence, the direct, shall we say, emanation of that universal mind, and an essence which pervades all through all space, we are part of that. So this idea of looking within and starting anywhere where we are, we can start to understand the difference between just a casual dream of the time or the moment versus that of something of a higher type thing. And it is, as a rule, all we experience of a dream from that inner man upon awakening is a feeling, sort of a feeling of almost euphoria. And yet it doesn't last long. It fades away as we become active in that working part of our working everyday life. And that type of dream, just the essence, because we have stated earlier, it's because of the physical brain that we have in any one lifetime, it gets all broken up and confused. So we bring it back to what we know as what a symbol on this level means versus what a universal symbol would mean. And it can make a very profound impression. And we know there's the difference that we get the feeling of that of a regular room, a regular dream. And we wanted to mention in the book, Vernal Blooms by William Q. Judge, there is an article, it's called Proof of the Hidden Self. And it takes us through dream states, waking, clairvoyance, feeling of identity. We are the hidden self, and that self is above and beyond this physical body and this physical brain. So that gives us an idea that we think one of the biggest proofs from dreams is a proof of an identity, that we know that those dreams seem very much real to us, more real than our daily life. And there are those who dream in color. There are those who don't dream in color. There are different effects, but what we're talking about is to know that there is a part of our nature that every night when we put our head to that pillow, eventually we end up, and everyone, even the criminal, gets to that highest state. Everybody dreams. The type of dreams that we dream are to be important. The type of dreams of the highest are the visions of the night. And the instruction that is given, if we work hard enough in any one lifetime, we will be able to understand our dreams and understand that highest part of our nature and know who and what we really are. So this should basically give us some ideas for discussion.
You just mentioned that even the criminal attains to the highest state when they're in the deep sleep state. And when you think about it, it almost doesn't seem fair. Because if they're a vicious criminal, why should they get rewarded? Why should they have? Isn't it? When you're on that state, you're one with all. So it's a period of refreshment and reward, is it not?
Not if you look at it that way. But if you look at the fact that you and I, and everyone else in this room, no matter what we do or what our background is, you're talking about a one-life situation. Who knows what the true spiritual ego within us, that reincarnating ego, has been through lives and lives before. And it could be, this might be the last thing that this individual has to learn through. Who knows what heights one has been. And if we're all truly from the same essence, there is a part of our nature, the real part of our nature, that, yes, can go to those levels.
And we think, too, that if this if a person is a strong materialist, a criminal, or whatever, he may not get the benefit of that freedom that his higher nature will have, because kama, the passions and desires, along with his lower manas, are so strong that if he is to benefit from that higher contact, nothing may get through. It's really hard to say.
As a follow-up, so then it would depend on one's nature, what one brings back, that we're all one in reality. There's a universal brotherhood. We're all one. But if the person's nature is such that it can't understand it, mm-hmm. perhaps, they don't really get as much benefit as, say, someone who is leading a really good life and a true theosophist, in the sense that they're always doing for others, selflessly helping others, and they're meditating, and so they would understand that language, and that mm-hmm. state would translate to them, but it would be garbled for somebody who's not receptive to it.
And you have to remember, karma plays a big point in this. Whatever causes and effects are coming in any one lifetime, we ourselves have made it. So if we've made it so many lifetimes of keeping a veil over it, then we're getting what we deserve. But there will be a time, an inner stretching of wanting it, that it will come in some lifetime. So technically, on that level of, shall we say, reality, we're all the same. Yes?
Perhaps we need to put it a little differently. It isn't the criminal that goes into deep sleep. It is the soul who is, in his lower nature, acting in a criminal way. None of us can say we haven't done that in some life. Mm. We've been incarnating millions of years, so we've probably experienced it all. But it isn't the criminal that goes into deep sleep. It is the soul where it is refreshed. We may not remember anything about it, and we're not criminals, because of the way we think and act and live on this plane.
Right.
But all of us get the benefit from it. It is like spiritual food or spiritual water. It refreshes us even if we don't know it, or we go mad doing it.
That was a very important point that we forgot to mention. It is true. It isn't, quote, the criminal that's going through that. Way in the back.
Well, isn't it extremely dangerous to judge the conditions of another soul?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to label someone else as less than or criminal without the knowledge of what their motives are, what the conditions of the learning experience they're having is, none of us can judge the path of another. And frankly, with being self-deluded, sometimes we have trouble judging our own paths. So if we just focus on the fact that each and all are soul, and that at some level there is a oneness, there's a complete synthesis of all that conditioned experience that each of us works through in a particular way. But we're not to judge each other, and certainly not to label what another is deserving as a quote reward.
And also, based on that idea of we can't judge each other, that's also the reason why we shouldn't be trying to decipher what somebody else's dreams are all about. Did you?
Well, it's interesting that Joseph, who was an interpreter of dreams, and many of the individuals in the Bible who were dreaming and having real dreams were judged by their societies at the time and condemned as criminals at their time. So, as the previous point is, criminal is relative.
Right.
But the other point we had was, in our Wednesday evening classes, we're studying about the astral body and its senses, faculties. It would seem that since we are able to function, sense, perceive, taste, touch, feel, realities as well as fancies, that when our physical senses are asleep, mm-hmm. that this is a proof that we use these senses and perceive things on the astral plane during dreams, lower and higher.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, we definitely do, because as was stated earlier, we see, we touch, we feel, and we know, and yet it seems so real at the time, and it, in a way, it is more real than what we see in our waking life and how we act and see and touch and feel. So that whole, there's different levels. We have to remember, again, from the astral to the Akasha, there are 7 different planes of consciousness here. And where we're working on what level, that's all that we could see. Now, there are adepts and masters, great sages, that can look and see and live on different levels and planes of consciousness. At our point of evolution right now, we cannot, but it doesn't mean we can't work towards it. Yes.
Very basic question that we had not thought about until today with this topic. We often say in the dreamless sleep, the ideas are conveyed to us. Are they generated from us in the first step? Are we creating this dream, this message, this idea, and then is it in that higher state reformulated so that we give the message back to ourselves in a sense, or is it that we're touching this higher plane and receiving some signal or idea?
Well, it's interesting because they also say the whole idea of doing the review at night before you go to sleep, as well as reliving the day and seeing where we could have done things differently, it's also like clearing out the cobwebs, so to speak, so that when we do fall asleep, it's almost like we're setting the stage for what might happen. But in regards to the rest of her question, we're not sure.
Well, let's look at this idea. If, in fact, we are, in any one lifetime, going through causes and effects that we've caused in lives before, and we do know within man, the 7 comes up again. There is a higher part of our nature, shall we say, and there is a lower part of our nature. And that quality that carries all, in a way, that has been learned by each one, that the ego has gone through, is that Buddhi quality, which is within us. We call it the storehouse of our knowledge. But we have to understand that to be able to see the future, the past, the present. On such a grand scale, there is no separation. There's always, shall we say, just the now in that level. For us to be able to bring it back in any one lifetime through this physical brain that has to be made porous to understand these higher ideas to come through, it's not like we're redoing, but there is a part of our nature that sort of knows. And we call that the voice of the silence, shall we say, or intuitively something comes through letting us know we're not doing it correctly. So there are heights of a, shall we say, of combinations from what we've been through in the past and the knowledge we've gained to be able to live it in one lifetime is a large portion. So it's a little of both. We're touching on that which we already have earned and learned in previous lives. And also to be able for the soul to have, it says, I think in one of the books it treats it like a jail, and that soul is locked in the jail, and when the is it called the goalie?
Or no, jailer.
The jailer. When the jailer leaves and falls asleep on his own, then that becomes the daytime of the soul. And for us, it's the reverse. It is a nighttime for us.
So the conditions and the efforts that we create are the channels, in a sense, or the way the of communication of these higher to our minds. Okay.
Yes.
I think it's a very intriguing idea to think that maybe the dream state is this right now, and maybe we're not much. Maybe it's just happening, and we're not as much of a participant in it as we think we are. So, I mean, that idea just is kind of fascinating to me. And, you know, again, it's present all throughout all kinds of modern mythology in all kinds of different areas. And, you know, in some way, if you apply, like, you know, other higher theosophical, other principles to it, like just the principles of just being the witness, where you kind of step back from the dream and just watch things happen. I mean, maybe that's the part of where you kind of die before you die, and you're awake within the dream. And maybe the answer is just that simple. And it's not having to figure out every little tiny thing that happens, which is, you know, drives you crazy. It's just stepping back and watching the dream happen.
That is a very good point you brought up, because we use this idea of dreaming and going to sleep at night in very much in connection in with the death of the body.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that we like about studying this whole theosophical idea about dreams is most people don't really take dreams seriously, we don't think. But what we're saying here is that we can nurture that state, the dream state, by having the, you know, going through our review before we go to sleep. And the whole idea, as was just stated, stepping back and looking at what it is that is coming through and trying to be open and our brains being porous to that nudging that we hope will come through.
Yeah.
What is the role of compassion, the heart, in helping our brains become more porous?
Well, the whole idea of how can we make our brains more porous and with compassion, the idea that if we can pointedly look at our lives and see when and where we are, when we look at the mind as being able to function from a higher, more spiritual aspect, or a lower and more passionate aspect, if we can do that review at night and try and meditate at some point in the morning before your day goes, you're setting yourself up for a more dispassionate look at what your day is going to be. Dispassionate not being a negative way, but as in the previous statement about pulling back and being detached from the emotions. But when we're talking about compassion, compassion gives the idea of a more spiritual aspect to the feelings that one has to another. So if we can look at our day and make it a more spiritual function, and trying to be aware of how we can look at that universal brotherhood idea, and knowing that everybody is working out their karma, and that those people that are coming to you are coming to you for a reason. I mean, we would think this is a big order, of doing all of this, because we always get distracted by the day, and but we think that making our minds more porous to the higher promptings would be functioning closer to that level.
Yes, in the Bhagavad Gita, and I can't recall it exactly, but it says to the person who is thinking at the end of their life, if they, they are, their minds are on their higher self, to them, they have a certain reward. But that practice is started in the end of the day review. Mm-hmm. It doesn't come just at that one time, you're laying there and you're dying, and all of a sudden you think, well, I'm going to do this. It's a habit that you form. And like all habits, you build things with these habits. You are constructing a better person with these habits. That's what is meant by the fact that you are moving towards a certain goal. You are making a better you, a better person, and you use these tools with which to do it.
Well, it's sent. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No.
Well, are you gonna?
No, I was just gonna say to him, you become the judge, shall we say, your own judge at this trial of what you've seen for that day.
And follow up on that, who else could judge you?
Right,
right.
Who else knows the secrets and the motivations of your heart but you? So you are a perfect judge for yourself.
Well, when we're comparing the similarities between the after-death states and the sleep states, and we look at doing the review before we go to bed to kind of set up a good tone, the same thing is that that period before one actually dies could set up a different tone to the after-death states as well. So there's another comparison. Yes?
Would you say then, we get the idea that on this plane, it's like a theater, a play. We draw back the curtain and see the real players and experiences on stage. Maybe I have it reversed. Is this real, or is the reality when we go to sleep?
Yes, and it's also that same idea that if we look at this idea of the steps that we take to go to sleep, go into these states day after day, and we come back. And if we look at this, it also should maybe help us look at the idea of death. Because those feelings and thoughts that are held in the individual at that close moments of death are what set the tone for the stages afterwards that they will go into. And that's why this idea of the review at night, you are setting the stage of what we will have to go through. We have to go through the astral, the psychic plane, work our way up to that deep sleep state. And we're also going to come back, as we stated, the same way. So it should be a bit of a help to us to understand, why do we even have that fear of death? Do we fear about going to sleep at night and dreaming and not coming back? It's a cycle. Everything in this universe is a cycle, big or small. Way in the back.
Well, just the question earlier alluded to the fact that this life on this physical plane is a dream.
True.
Well, and it absolutely is, but it's a necessary dream and experience of the soul. The difference is, in a dream, we're like watching a film and it pulls us one way or another. Here is the only place where we make choices and set up causes and can review our actions, our thinking. It's only here that we have real power beyond the power of absorption. Mm-hmm. So this is a dream, but boy, it's important.
Yes. Do you have a point?
You found it.
You. Did you have it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Well, yes.
How do I tell the difference if I'm dreaming versus if one is in an astral state?
How
whether
do
I'm
you
dreaming or whether I'm in an astral state?
It's the same. If you, how do you tell if you're dreaming or in an astral?
Or if I went into an astral state. In other words, how do I know the difference? If I'm just having a dream when I wake up in the morning, saying that, wow, I just had this great dream. Or when I wake up in the morning, I say, wow, you know, I was just frolicking in some astral plane.
Ah, I see what you're saying. Okay, first of all, that second part, frolicking in the astral plane, is very dangerous. And individuals should not try to work themselves up on, quote, leave the body. The astral plane is very dangerous. The psychic plane is very dangerous. If you're of a, short as how we say, a clean mind, you don't dabble in those, so you don't have to know the difference. But there is danger in trying to do things that one should not be doing at this time of his development and evolution.
In the, one of the previous comments, a dream was likened unto a film, and we just wanted to extend that analogy to help us understand the activity of the soul in the dreamless state. We've all had the experience of watching videos of vacations we may have taken years ago. The dreamless state is the activity of the ego on the highest plane. It's analogous to our being on vacation. Years later, we've forgotten that experience, that activity is not known as to us. The only experience we have of it is to the extent it's recorded perfectly or imperfectly on that film or that video. Well, the dream state is like that. It's a recording, an impression made by the ego on substance once it comes back from that true activity it had on the highest plane. So to the extent we know of our activity on that plane depends on the how refined the recording instrument is, the film, and that, of course, is karma.
And for a lot of people, this whole idea of the true inner man, and I'm not this physical body, it's sort of, you know, very rare for them to even think about that. But once you start thinking about this, we call it that hidden self, that real self, that reincarnating ego within, we maybe all start having a different attitude about how we think we're living our life in any one lifetime. We are the thinker, we're the perceiver, we're the knower, and we're the experiencer. We're all of these wrapped together. It just makes a little bit more depth to who and what we really are. And with this idea of the vacation in the video, it's like we have, within that Buddhi quality, we have all this great knowledge from past incarnations of learning. We can tap into that and touch it right now and here in a physical form. We just have to work our way to making this physical form and this brain of ours to be able to understand what we're really seeing. Yes.
Martin Luther King,
We'll get you.
No. Yeah.
Here.
No. Right here.
Go.
Okay. So we mentioned going through different states of consciousness. And I think, Marion, you mentioned paralysis, where your body and your brain are essentially paralyzed, allowing, I guess, your consciousness to shift through those states. So there's instances, and it's been documented and recorded in somewhere in literature, where your body maintains that paralysis, and yet your mind is awake. So they call that scientifically sleep paralysis. So what state are you in at that point? You're not dreaming, or are you? Or is that astral state you shouldn't be in? And are you receiving, and there's instances where people were receiving messages during that state. So is that messages coming from the higher? We're not quite there. So it's almost like an in-between.
Well, it's interesting because we've heard there's many inventions that have been, we think Edison or Bell or somebody had been given ideas. So, you know, those are like, you know, messages. But we're trying to remember in regards to sleep paralysis when somebody is awake. And
well, isn't it that the form is not working properly, but it doesn't mean the thinker's not there?
Does somebody want to...
Well, there's something called a locked-in syndrome.
Yeah.
Like a pontine infarct, where you have no motor function whatsoever, but yet your mind is completely active. So perhaps that's what you're referring to.
But no,
so
there are...
Really fit with, you know, you still have the same consciousness, but it's just that you have no motor.
And you have no way to communicate, right?
But we know that on this, you know, part of the sleep, you know, somebody could be functioning normally and go to sleep, and then they wake up and they can't move. But it's only for a short period of time, and we wonder if there's some split between...
Well, the dream state is a process of the natural...
Mm-hmm.
Putting the sleep, we say, of the physical body. These paralysis states or disease states or trance states don't necessarily refer to that, but do prove that if the brain and the body is inactive for one reason or another, that a whole inner set of faculties are awakening. And it would depend on which one of those were active, whether the information coming through is of a high nature,
mm-hmm.
or is just purely of the lower psychic. It's an individual.
Just that there are a couple of books in the library downstairs that relate to inspirations in dreams, whether mechanical inventions, compositions, poetry. It's historical. And many, many famous people, well, we think the most famous would be Lincoln, who dreamt his own funeral just before he was assassinated. So it is common to get knowledge from dreams.
Yes.
Well, we think perhaps there's two different states. There's sleep paralysis, and then there's the hypnagogic, which is when you have the creative ideas and you have a flash and you say, aha, and it's something, a problem that you've been working on, and then all of a sudden the solution comes to you in a dream. And you know, supposedly Edison would sit in a chair with a steel ball in his hand, and then when it relaxed, and it hit the floor, oftentimes he would think of something. He knew he went into that state,
okay.
And he would awaken himself by using that methodology.
I think that gives us a lot to dream about tonight. I mean, you can, you know, set the mode, set the feeling, and see what you can pick up.
Yeah, the meeting's over. Thank you.
But it went too fast.
I know.
Face.
I was waiting. I
know. I had it, but I thought all the questions are still coming. You got to get Mark to shorten his questions. You work on it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ooh, your hands are warm today. Okay.